VentureCast.
Welcome to the Quantum Leap Your Business and Life podcast. I'm Bethany London, and my mission is clear: to catalyze leaders like yourself to transcend limitations and manifest quantum success through new awareness, intuitive business guidance, and energetic healing. If you're ready to unlock the boundless potential, I'm thrilled to offer you an exclusive opportunity. Head to BethanyLondon.com to claim 8 free success-fueled channeled healing sessions. These are designed to supercharge your journey towards exponential growth and fulfillment. My commitment to you is unwavering, to uncover the infinite possibilities that await. Thank you for joining. Let's dive deep, soar high, and quantum leap into a realm of infinite success and joy. I'm so excited to have Dr. Joe Vitale here. I had the beautiful pleasure of meeting him at my friend's launch of a movie, Beyond Physical Matter, of which he is a part of, as well as The Secret, which you may know him originally from. I personally have loved his content, his books. He's written over 80 books, and my favorite was Zero Limits. But the first one I read was The Attractor Factor. And it's funny because I'm like, let me go back to my notes and see if I have anything on it. And I have like a whole plethora of notes from that book. It was so good. So really excited to have you here. First off, this is all about quantum leaping in business and life. And you've obviously had a quantum leap in business. I didn't know this whole homeless story, that you were homeless. That was new to me when I was doing some research. But I also saw that you had started studying like the metaphysics and all that when you were young. So I'd love to hear more about that. When were you homeless, and like, how does that all line up?
Well, I was homeless in the late 1970s.
Okay.
And I was chasing my dream. I wanted to be an author. And along the way, I found some roadblocks, many of them internal, with self-esteem and beliefs about success and all of that. And before you know it, I was in Dallas, Texas, and didn't have a home, didn't have a car, didn't have a job, didn't have money. I was pretty much living in the Dallas Public Library, which was kind of cool on one level because it was books, and I'm a book addict. And it was air conditioned, and they had water, and they had a bathroom. But it really sucked on all the other levels because there was no food, no money, no home, no, you know, transportation, no job.
Showers.
Yeah, all of that kind of stuff. You kind of towel off, so to speak, in the bathroom. But the metaphysics and all of that, that started very young because I was interested in self-help, metaphysics, philosophy when I was probably 13, 14, 15 years old. I didn't know it at the time, but I was profoundly unhappy and I was looking for the door, the window, some sort of escape so I can find some hint of a gleam of bliss, happiness, whatever the word might be. And because I so loved books and the public library was pretty famous where I was at, I would walk there and read those books. And reading self-help and the popular psychology is very close to the metaphysical side of the library. And so I would start to deep dive into that. I got into hypnosis when I was a kid. I was hypnotizing a neighbor friend of mine when we were 16 years old. Exploring these other dimensions because I was trying to find out what's real, what works, and what's happy. And I decided to be an author then, but there was no such thing as an overnight success in my life. That took decades, including a stint in homelessness and 10 years in poverty.
10 years in poverty to break through. Well, what brought you to your curiosity about the metaphysics, like even at 13?
I sensed that there was more. I sensed that the reality I was experiencing, and believe me, I didn't have deep thoughts about this. It was just that I was unhappy and I was being abused and I was looking for another way out. And so by looking through books, it would take me to the door of another dimension, like for a quantum leap, though I didn't have that phrase quantum leap back then either. And metaphysics had this esoteric secret promise that there was something else, if I could only find it. And it seemed like things like hypnosis gave me tools that unlocked parts of my mind that could take me to those places. So I was profoundly fascinated. I wasn't making much sense of it. I mean, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have coaching. We didn't have masterminds. We didn't have all of that. Plus, I was a kid doing this on my own for the most part. But I think curiosity is what's got me here. I mean, I'm always curious and I'm always passionate about something. And then I pursue it, not knowing where it's going to go. And here I am in my 70s. I've written, you know, you said 80 books. They tell me I've written
90. You don't even know.
And I have another one coming out. I didn't even know it. I'm just doing your thing.
I love it.
I'm just doing.
Well, okay. So 10 years in the poverty cycle, was there like a turning point? Yeah. Like, I know they say like, the soul, night of the soul. I'm like, oh, I think that's the dark night of the ego or something. But
yeah. Well, I tell people the dark night of the soul lasted about 10 years. It was not a night. It was 10 years of off and on nights. And those rough times. And again, you got to remember, I didn't have the tools and resources or podcasts. We didn't know what that was back then. So people today are far luckier because they have resources. They have information. They have tools that can get them through these blocks faster. But I was doing it on my own, and part of me wanted to do it on my own. Part of me was thinking like the Lone Ranger. I had seen too many John Wayne movies growing up, and I thought, you got to be a man. You got to do this by yourself. You don't need anybody else's help, which is a formula for failure.
Yes.
I'll tell you right now, that is not the easy way to get through life. And so I experienced all those dark nights. There was not a single moment that I can tell you there was a breakthrough, but there was a series of moments. And those series almost always went around beliefs. One of the big beliefs I had back then is that I really thought I had to struggle in order to be a success. And when I say struggle, I don't mean just kind of be uncomfortable and fight with your muse and have days with writer's block. No, I'm talking about struggle in terms of, let's make myself homeless. Let's make
myself needed a rags to riches story.
Absolutely. We got to go to zero in order to get to this elevated place. And I remember reading all these books, again, metaphysics and self-help, and that kept pointing to beliefs. And I thought, what would I be believing to put me into homelessness and in poverty? Until I realized, oh, shit. I was modeling my life after these dramatic authors like Jack London, one of my favorite authors, a great American classic literature fellow. But he was an alcoholic. He was miserable. He was dead as a suicide at the age of 40 after writing 50 books and being world famous. And the other one was Ernest Hemingway. I loved Ernest Hemingway's writing style, that masculine, punchy kind of style. He lived fairly long, but he was an alcoholic. He was unhappy and he shot himself. And I woke up to the realization that I was going in that direction because I thought that was the curriculum. I thought that's what I had to do. When I awoke to, wait a minute, that's a belief. It's not necessarily true. It's only true if I make it true. I said, surely there's authors out there that are happy and well-adjusted and prolific and profitable and successful. What if I find them and model my life more on them? And I did. As I made that shift, I started to go in a more positive direction and an easier direction. So I would say those ahas were a series of awakenings where I realized beliefs were being created unconsciously. I didn't intend to be homeless. I didn't sit around going, I'm going to go and be homeless. Then I'm going to be in poverty and then I'll be a success. No, it was the unconscious that was paying attention to that wiring and saying, let's live that out. And then consciously, when I saw those beliefs and said, wait a minute, maybe there's another way or a different belief, selected the new belief, selected the new way, and then it got easier. And most of my work these days is to help people find those hidden blocks, those hidden beliefs, and remove them so they can make that quantum leap into the life that they've been wanting all along. Yep.
I mean, I'm always like, okay, let's find the trend. What's the trend? Like, are you modeling your parents, you know? You are apparently modeling some authors. So it's good to find those so we can have that first off conscious shift. Yeah. And then also do the healing.
You bring up a good point, though, because I want people to realize that we're all doing it to some extent. And most of the time we've done it with our parents and unknowingly, because they were the first people, they were the programmers in our life when we were growing up. And they had their own programs that they weren't aware of, and they passed them on to us, which we weren't aware of. And then we end up as an adult wondering why we get certain results that are similar to our parents. And we have to look at all that. For example, with my father, I thought he was so brilliant when he would say, you know how to double your money? He would say, you take your money, you fold it over, and you put it back in your pocket. And I thought, oh, my dad's smart. Until I realized I was struggling with money, and I looked and said, wait a minute, is that actually true? Is that how you double your money? That's actually a scarcity thought. And that keeps you holding on to the little bit you already have, and you've deceived yourself into thinking you've doubled it when you actually didn't do anything of the sort. So I had to go and look at beliefs I got from my parents, father and mother, and of course, the extended family. What did they do to influence me? And then I had to question them. And I'm saying all this for the people that listen or view this, for them to hold a mirror up. There's nothing wrong with what our parents were trying to do. They were trying to help us survive, but they were not Mr. and Mrs. Buddha. They were not enlightened. They had their own hangups and their own blocks, most of which they probably didn't have a clue about. But we, as the people awakening today and wanting more out of life and wanting to make that quantum jump, we have to look at all of that and go, does that serve me? Does that belief serve me? Does that story serve me? Does that way of living serve me? My father grew up in the Great Depression. He was born in 1925. Great Depression in the U.S. in 1929 deeply programmed him forever. He lived to be 93 years old, and he still lived as if he was in the Great Depression.
Well, I just think of my granny, too.
Yes. Anybody that went through that, that's a tough thing to get past. But we didn't go through it. We can easily get past it when we're aware that that was their belief system, not ours.
Yeah, my granny, if there's something on sale, she has to buy like 20 of them. So you go to her house, she'll have like 20 boxes of whatever cereal that are like now expired, but like they were on sale.
My father had 15 cans of Folgers coffee in the cupboard because it was on sale. It'll probably last forever because it was in cans. You know, they were sealed. But at the same time, what kind of mentality is that from the larger issue? It is pure scarcity.
Yeah.
Pure scarcity. And we live in an abundant universe. You don't really know it until you open your eyes to see it.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Potter, have you watched those?
I watched the first.
Oh, actually, I'm like, why is this even in my mind right now? Because I saw that you outperformed one of her books or something, the author's book.
Oh, yes. You mentioned The Attractor Factor way back in 2005 when The Attractor Factor, a book very important to me, was already doing well. I thought, I really want this book to be number one. And back then, to be number one on Amazon meant you beat everything and everybody. And there was the new Harry Potter book coming out. And the Pope, who had just died, had an autobiography coming out. And both of them were in number one and number two. And I thought, how am I going to get ahead of them? And I used some marketing know-how and experience. And I talked about how I was the sole author all by myself using secret principles. And I was going to take down the media empire of the Vatican and the media empire behind the fictional Harry Potter. And I was going to make my book noteworthy. And my book became number one.
Were you doing any visualizing?
I pulled all the stops out. I did everything you can think of. And that was the book that got me into the movie The Secret. The Attractor Factor did so well that this woman in Australia, who I did not know, Rhonda Byrne, obviously, she read the book and she called me up. And back then I was answering my phone. So I answered the phone and she said, I read your book, The Attractor Factor. I'm making a movie about the law of attraction. I'd really like you to be in it. And I didn't know her. I didn't actually believe her. And I just said, hey, if you get it together, call me sometime. And I thought I'd never hear from her again. But it was that book that got me into the movie The Secret. And of course, being in the movie The Secret, people still talk about it today.
It's still good.
Yes. Scripting, visualizing, nebulizing, affirming. I did the psychological, the metaphysical, and the marketing. I did everything.
So to tie in the whole Harry Potter, why it was coming through, besides that, is because when I'm watching these movies, which are very uncomfortable, I'm like, oh, there's the government, there's the parents. That, like, I'm just constantly healing all of it because it's all a reflection to us somehow. And so that's what
And that's an important thing to look at. I don't obviously know your audience, but you had mentioned Zero Limits earlier. And Zero Limits is one of my books where I brought the Hawaiian concept of healing called Ho'oponopono. I brought it to the world through that book. And in fact, the new book coming out is called Zero Limits Living, which is a continuation of all of it. But in Ho'oponopono, they really do look at everything on the outside is an exact mirror of what's on the inside. And most of us don't know that because we think the outside is real, and it certainly looks real. Einstein said it's a very persistent illusion, but it's an illusion. And in Ho'oponopono, they talk about if you do see things like you're watching TV or you're watching a movie and something triggers you, you got to remember the trigger isn't in the movie, the trigger isn't in the outside, the trigger is in you. And so we use Ho'oponopono or any techniques that somebody might have to go inside to deprogram, to unwire, to snip the wires, whatever you want to call it, to make the chains so it doesn't trigger you, understanding that as you make peace in you, it actually gets changed in the outside too. Yeah. That's the miracle. That is what is so wild about all this. It's very metaphysical, quantum, woo-woo, and that and the other. But
well, yeah, I'm like super not into watching the news because I get triggered, right? And then I have other healers that are like, no. It's really good to watch the news because you just heal everything. Just like you were saying, you heal it on the inside, and then hopefully we aren't giving in to the media and the fears and everything that they want us to be powered by. And yeah, it's just an elevated planet.
Well, I've been like you. I've told people, look, you can be a lot happier if you just do one thing.
Yeah.
Turn off the news. Turn it off. But I got to admit that Dr. Hu Lin, who was the therapist who taught me Ho'oponopono, and we did the first book, Zero Limits, together. One time when we were doing the original research, I dropped him off at the hotel and left him alone. Then later I came to pick him up and I just, you know, making conversation. Hey, what have you been doing? He said, I've been watching the news. And I was appalled. I was like, he's my guru. This is the therapist who healed these mentally ill people. He's practicing the spiritual technique. He's watching the news. How is that possible? So I just politely said, why? And he said he was using it to clean himself, to clear himself, much like your friends had said. They're watching it and it's bothering them, but the bother is a good thing because it's showing them where they need to make peace inside themselves, understanding that as they do, it slowly starts to, you know, neutralize what's going on the outside. And I never forgot, it was a turning point for me because his whole inside of, he wasn't afraid of the news and he knew that it was going to do something to him. But what he was responding with was Ho'oponopono, which is a way to clear what was triggered in him to make a difference in what was actually being projected on the TV.
So good. And talking about Zero Limits, I told you, I literally tell every single one. I work with a lot of business owners. I do corporate healing. So I tune into the soul, the businesses, but I'm often, they're like, why are we clearing this? Why are we doing this? Da, 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 da. And I'm like, read Zero Limits and you'll get it. Because they're like, this has nothing to do with me. I'm like, yes, it does. So in Zero Limits, you share the story of, what's his name, Dr. Lin?
Yeah, Dr. Hu Lin, okay, or just Dr.
Lin. So he has everyone at the psychiatric ward and he takes it upon himself to heal all these patients on him. He doesn't even visit them. And so through that, the whole... Yeah, you can tell the rest of the story. Tell it.
Well, it's a big jump for most people because we're talking about, I used to say it's 100% responsibility, but when people read Zero Limits and they understand how this works, they say it's more like 200% responsibility because whatever you think is going on in the world is actually going on in you. What I try to do to point out to everybody is, where are you experiencing it? If I experience an upset, where's the upset? Is it over there? Is it over there? I might blame somebody and say,
you're an awful person.
Where's the upset?
Well, okay, but you're the one being triggered.
Yeah, I can say that. But where am I saying it? And where am I experiencing it? And as you know, it's in me. So Dr. Hu Lin and the story I first heard, which I couldn't even believe at first, I dismissed it for a year because I thought that can't be true. was about a therapist who helped heal an entire ward of mentally ill criminals, not even working with them directly, but working on himself as he reviewed their records.
I didn't remember the criminals. Sense. Yeah, so good.
Oh, yeah, mentally ill criminals. In fact, they were so dangerous. They were shackled or sedated on a daily basis. And the nurses, the social workers, and the doctors were quitting. And that's one reason they were looking for anybody. They needed to have a licensed therapist there for their funding. It's a state hospital in Hawaii. And Dr. Hulan is the guy who says, I'll do it, but I'm going to do my own version of therapy. And so they're desperate. And they say, well, whoever the hell you are, come on in here. And what he does is he's looking at their charts. And as he's looking at them, I mean, they're violent criminals. They're killings, there's rapes, there's violence of one sort or another. So he's responding. You know, he's upset, he's embarrassed, he's enraged himself, and he uses the strange Hawaiian spiritual mystical cleansing technique that ultimately is called Ho'oponopono. But he's not using it on them. He's using it on the trigger that those files caused in him. And as he dilutes those problems in him and his responses in him, and he gets more to a place of peace, what's reflected is the patient started to get better. They didn't have to be shackled. They didn't have to be sedated. Nurses actually commented on, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it because it seems like this is becoming a happier place. And over 4 years, virtually everybody was released. They were reassessed, considered to be okay to go back in society, and did. And so I found the therapist, who was Dr. Hulan. I trained with him. We did 3 workshops together over years. And we wrote the first book together, Zero Limits. I've since written At Zero, The Fifth Phrase, and the new one coming out is Zero Limits Living. And since your audience is probably going to be curious, let me give you the nutshell. I mean, I know you know this, but the basics of Ho'oponopono are 4 phrases that you say in yourself to your connection to divinity. That could be God. You call it whatever you want. I more or less say divinity. It seems like it's more neutral than a lot of words that might trigger people. But you're saying 4 phrases. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. Those are the 4 phrases. So as you're feeling the upset, and I invite people right now, if they're upset about something or confused, they might be confused right now. That's all in you. Whatever is going on is in you. It's not out there anywhere. It's in you. So as you're feeling it, you're kind of making a prayer or petition to whatever you think your higher power is. And again, I say often the divine, but it can be whatever name you use. And I'm asking it to clear me. I'm basically saying, I'm sorry for whatever the belief is, whether I know it or not. Please forgive me, or even please forgive my ancestors or parents or neighbors or society or government that I acquired this from. Thank you for healing this in me and anybody down my genetics that has been touched by it. And I love you for my life, for my process, for Ho'oponopono and everything else. That's, you know, just slightly extended. I've written 4 books on this, so there's more to it. But I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. Anybody listening or watching can take and run with right now. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you.
The way I originally learned it, I think a decade ago, was, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Thank you for being in my life so that I may love you. So it was like a learning experience to like learn to love, right? Because it's so difficult.
I love it. I love it. People say it in different ways. People almost always just say it inside themselves. It's not something you typically say outside, and you almost never say it to anybody else because it's an internal experience. Yeah. You're doing it in you. One of the first things people do that is a mistake is to think, I need to go tell such and such how to do this.
Guilty.
No. Yeah, whoever it is that you think needs to run over there and be told, you need to do it on you about that desire to go and change somebody. I used to talk about to Dr. Hulan about that, and he said, it's a violation of free will. Plus, you're messing with somebody else's karma. Work on you.
I'm like, Go read Zero Limits. And you'll understand. That's what I do all the time.
At least
all
that.
The time.
Right? Well, there's videos online. There's a lot of material that's free. They don't have to buy the book, or they can just go to the library and read it. But Zero Limits is what started.
Well, not my original coach, but one of my first big coaches that taught me the Ho'oponopono. he would talk about even before going and like doing a talk or a workshop and facilitating, to go and ho'opono like all the seats and the space and do everything before people even came in, just to clear and neutralize.
Yeah. Dr. Hulin not only did that, but he would ask for the list of everybody that going to be attending and a printout of all the names. And he would take, this is a pen, but he would take a pencil with the eraser part and touch each name. Because he was cleansing them and himself before anybody got in the room. And I was with him because we did three events together. He wanted to go to the hotel. He wanted to walk around the room. He wanted to, there's a crazy story the first time he did it where I take him to the hotel room and he's talking to the walls and he's talking to the floor and he invites me to talk to the walls and the floor. And I wasn't quite in the same place he was at that time. I've since learned everything's alive. So go ahead and talk to them. But yes, they were doing that. And he was doing that to set the stage, also clear all the energy, but more importantly, cleanse himself. So he can be in the moment, he can receive inspiration and be there to speak whatever the divine is urging him to say.
Wow. That, I mean, he's obviously living it 100%.
Well, he's not living it anymore. He's living it 100% now, but he's passed on. Yeah, he passed on. So he's merged with
He left an impact. So that's beautiful. Or a legacy through you or with you. And for all those people on board, just think. I'm wondering if they were ever interviewed, if they, you know, on the shifts they were experiencing.
Well, I tried to reach them. I did talk to doctors. I did talk to social workers that were there. And of course, I interviewed Dr. Hulin and spent a lot of time with him. But because of the, there's a term for it, the privacy for those patients, that was all locked down. So I never got to talk to any of the patients. But I talked to the people that had
one. And they could see the shifts. So cool. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about business. You're constantly expanding. It's what drives you. I mean, to write another book and and your albums. I did listen to some music today.
Thank you. Well, the short answer is I pursue my passion. I pursue what I'm curious about and what I have a fire in me to do or to know more about. When I turned 60, which was at this point almost 11 years ago, I looked around and thought, well, I've done quite a bit and I've been in movies and I've done the books and I've been on stages and I've done quite a bit. What is left undone? And I thought, well, I really love music. And I had guitars, didn't really know how to play, but I had some guitars and I thought, I want to really learn how to play the guitar, sing, write songs. And you know what? I'd actually even like to make an album. So I decided I was going to be a musician and I was going to create. And the first thing that happened was sheer terror, because I thought, what is this? What if this is the biggest mistake of my life? What if I go down a whole new road and my brand is over here and suddenly I'm over here? And from a business standpoint, nobody connects and nobody understands. But I also thought, you know, I tell people to face their fears. I tell people to go for their dreams. I tell people to do what they love. Well, I should do that. So I did. And at this point, I have 15 albums. Six of them singer-songwriter albums. Some of the music's been used as soundtracks in movies. A couple of my songs were nominated for the POSI Award, which is the Emmys of Positive Music. There's some other things I don't remember, but it has been a great joy for me to do it. Also, a while back, I got interested in strongman training. And this is like the little kid in me who wanted to be Superman when I was, you know, in the 60s. And I thought, maybe there's a chance. I knew some of the people who could bend horseshoes and bend nails. And I thought, how do you do that? I was invited to do a weekend workshop where, again, I almost didn't do it because of fear. And I often say this because I want everybody to realize we all have fears. You might look and go, oh, that person doesn't have any fears anymore. You do something new and you're probably going to have fear because it's new to you. I learned how to bend horseshoes. I learned how to bend nails. I learned how to drive a nail through a board with my hand. It shredded limits that I didn't even know I had, because suddenly I thought, if I can do that, there's nothing like the feeling of holding a horseshoe. And you bend it. It's built for a horse, not for a man to bend. And so I got interested in that. I have my own movie in production right now. I have a movie about Zero Limits. We've been filming on a regular basis. There's other movies I keep being invited to be in. There's a crew coming Wednesday of this week that's going to be filming me for yet another movie. But to answer your question, I'm really just following my own curiosity, my own passion. I'm following it because it's unique to me and I'm intrigued. Something in me says, follow this. And I did it even when one of my favorite stories to tell is I was broke. I wasn't homeless, but I was still in poverty. And on a Christmas day, I was reading a book that I got from the library. That was my Christmas present. And it was about this copywriter, Robert Collier. And in that book, he mentioned Bruce Barton. And something in me, I mean, it means nothing to you, and it probably means nothing to anybody watching or listening, but it did to me. Something in me got scratched. And it was like, pursue that. Find out who that was. So I go to the library when they open up and I start researching Bruce Barton. Then I get obsessed. It's like, who was this guy? What happened to this guy? He had been a best-selling author. He started a big advertising agency, BBDO, one of the largest in the world. He started it in 1919. And all of these other things were fascinating me. I didn't have any money. Remember this. I am broke. I am unknown. There's no movies. There's no internet. I am doing this because I am driven to do this. And there's no sign this is going anywhere. No promise of a benefit. No promise of an end result. I pursue it anyway. Why? Passion. That quest ended up being a book of mine called The Seven Lost Secrets of Success. The Seven Lost Secrets of Success was a turning point in my life. People read that book and fell in love with Bruce Barton. And more importantly, which I didn't see coming, they somehow fell in love with me as the author of that book. They started hiring me for copywriting, for marketing, for some of the things that I was doing at the time. And I was on a radio show. You're not going to believe me, but I'm an introvert. I don't like to be on stage. I don't like to do public speaking. And I was terrified, immature, insecure, all of that back then. But I knew that I had to get on stages and talk in order to get the book out. So I go on a radio show and I start talking about the seven lost secrets of success. And there were a group of salespeople who just left a convention, leaving town, listening to the radio. They turned around to go back to a bookstore where I was doing a book signing and they bought all the books. Then there was another company. It was a network marketing company. The owner heard me and he bought 19,000 copies of my book for everybody in that company. That book has since been reprinted. I've added to it. It's still in print now as a hardcover on Amazon, The Seven Lost Secrets of Success. I'm telling you this whole story, though, because the only reason it got birthed is that my passion and my curiosity was there. Because nobody said, hey, Joe, if you write this and it would be a book, I didn't even know it would be a book, that it would do well, that it'd be a bestseller, that a big publisher would pick it up, that these salespeople would pick it up, that one sales company would buy 20,000 copies. There was none of that. It was passion alone. And I can tell stories like that about most of the things that I've done in my life.
Well, and when you had the 10 years, you were talking about all you knew is you wanted to be an author. So were you thinking like one book?
Yes. My first book was in 1984. And it came and went. It was one of the greatest disappointments of my life because I finally got published. 1984. I have a little book published, but I learned quickly publishers don't know how to market books. He was a really tiny publisher. The book came and went. There was no fanfare. There was no fuss. There was no money. There was no royalty. There was nothing. But here's the good thing that happened. I realized I had learned something called marketing. I didn't really know what marketing was at that point. I did a little bit because I had an entrepreneurial lean in me. But I had to learn marketing, copywriting, publicity, advertising, all of this. And I found I loved it. I found I was fascinated by it. I found that it awakened more fire in me. It's like, oh, I can write news releases. And actually, the media of the world wants my story. All I got to do is write the right kind of news release, get it to them, and they'll pick it up and run with it. That's when I started doing things for that book. I didn't have another book out for 10 years. So 1984 is the first one, comes and goes, but I learned marketing, and I start to become a marketer and a copywriter, and I was living in Houston, no internet yet, and by word of mouth and this, that, and the other, people start hiring me. But it was another 10 years before the next book came out.
So your vision was like get one book out and then you were going to have a successful life?
I would I think what I wanted was to make, this is probably more of the way to put it, I wanted to make a living as an author, writing books and plays and articles that made a difference in people's lives. I remember telling my father when I was 15, 16, I wanted to write comedy because I thought people were unhappy and I wanted to make a difference. Of course, I was the one who was unhappy, but I projected that that's what I would do. So I did have a play produced. It was a comedy in 1979. It actually won an award, but I was broke before it, during it, and afterwards. And it came and went. There's no cell phones, any of the stuff that we would have filmed the whole thing with at that point. And it was more baffling and more fleeting than anything else. So I wanted to make a living from my writing. I don't know that I thought about a good living. I mean, I drive a Lamborghini and I've been driving Bentleys for 10 years. I didn't know what either one of those were when I was starting out, you know, and I didn't care. It didn't matter. I wasn't thinking of that kind of a luxurious lifestyle.
That's also, that is curious because obviously now all that stuff is very publicized, social media and everything. So when someone's just like, this is what I'm looking to create with my business, da, 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 they're seeing like the massive, massive goals instead of like the journey, like being excited about each step.
Oh, I think the journey is far more important. And believe me, I understand all the people who want the destination because I was there as well. You know, when I want Easy Street, I'm thinking, well, I have a car that's at least dependable. I have a house that is a house and has got a roof and it doesn't leak. But you have to realize that the journey, maybe put it this way, there is no destination. There isn't a destination. There's no finish line. You never stop. Life just keeps going. We get recycled, if you will. But for the most part, it's like there is no finish line. You might say this is a particular goal I want. And along the way, you do such and such. But when you get that goal, it's not going to last very long. And you're going to want the next one. You really have to appreciate each moment. I wrote a book called The Miracle. I talk a lot about miracles. I always sign things, expect miracles. One of the signs behind me says expect miracles. But what I remind people is, this is the miracle. The miracle. We can be thinking about lunch or dinner or a date or something or what we've done in the past, something like that. Neither one of those are actually real. Past is gone. Future isn't here. The only thing that's actually real is here. So the more we can be in the transition, appreciating the moments, the more we will still hit the what we're calling destinations, but those will just be special moments when we get to them. And then we'll be on to the next.
So good. So good. Okay. I want to squeeze one little more question in. Curious because I know a lot of companies out there are having like plateaus or they're seeing like, you know, a downward trend. When you've been in those situations, or maybe you never have, which would be amazing as you've climbed, was there any like process or support that, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And of course we've all been through there, including me. I mean, we all have the shared experience of going through a pandemic. Some people were able to make something of it. Most people were able to survive it, but we were all set back on our heels somewhat during that. For me, all the speaking engagements were collapsed. I had 3 months worth of European tours. This is big money. Some of the biggest money comes from speaking engagements. All of it is flatlined. In fact, somewhat refunds, you know, nothing is happening there. Also went through a divorce that lasted 3 years. So it's no way to talk about how devastating and traumatic that is. So I know what it's like to go through all of that. And I don't think we all have an immune shot of some sort to keep it from happening. However, we do have our mind and we do have our mindset. And whether it was the pandemic or a divorce, I always found that a few key things helped me get through the day. One of them was, one day at a time, it's all fine. Just focus on today. Just focus on today. We let our mind go to the future or reminisce about the past. We're again in misery because of our mind. But if we can focus on today and what we can do today, that's the first thing. The second thing is, and Stoicism helped me a lot, especially through the divorce, because I would go back to what they went through, which is appalling and unimaginable, the life and the unexpected things that could take place. And I remember Marcus Aurelius had said at one point, he's talking to himself, he had said, stop complaining. If you could endure it, then endure it. And I would go for walks. I'd have a cigar, walking under the darkness and kind of reminiscing over my life and this, that, and the other. And I'd be hurting. I'd be hurting. And I'd think to myself what he said, can I endure it? Can I endure it? We're only talking about today. Can I endure it? Yeah, I don't want to, but I can. Then shut up and get through it. And the third thing, and this is when I was going through the divorce and I was really being shredded. And I talked to one of the attorneys and I said, look, this is your life. You know, you do this for a living. And I don't know how to comprehend this. I don't know how to swim through this. And I don't know the justice system. I don't know the theater of the court system. I don't know any of this. I said, what is the best advice you ever heard on getting through a divorce? And what he said, he took a moment to think about it, but what he said was useful for any of us going through anything. He said, focus on the future. So you put all this together and you got, I got to be today. I'm going to handle today. I got an eye towards the future. And I'm reminding myself that no matter what's going on, I may not like it, but
you
I can
endure it.
Beautiful. I can endure.
Three more tips, three keys to quantum leaping.
Well, you got to realize that the life we're living is basically from a limited mindset. I have a podcast of my own called Zero Limits Living. And what we do on that is weekly, I'm exploring, do we actually have any limits? And I will pinpointedly ask people, do we have limits? And universally, the answer is no, we don't, except the ones in our mind. And I always talk about Napoleon Hill, who had that great quote, if you can conceive it and believe it, you can achieve it. So it all goes back to the mind here. And I think really looking at that and realizing that whatever you're going through right now is probably coming out of a mindset that you're not quite aware of. So you can stop for a second and say, you know, if an alien came here and they would look at reality, they would see it completely differently. And they might say to you, you're doing things in this particular way. Have you ever talked about or thought about or contemplating doing it this way? And it opens you just enough to kind of step out of your reality to see the possibility of another reality. So I encourage people to kind of look at their own way of living as if you're in this nest of beliefs. And it's almost like you want to lift your head up and put another head on, which is one of the techniques I wrote about in my book, There's a Customer Born Every Minute. You put on the head of somebody else, put on the head of Einstein, put on the head of P.T. Barnum, who that book was about, put on the head of somebody that you admire, Branson or whoever comes to mind. How would they look at your life? And you can step out just a little bit from that reality. And I guess for a third thing, I would say there's a technique called what if up thinking. Mindy Odlin has been teaching it. She wrote a book called What If It All Goes Right? And it's a technique of being aware that most of us do what if down thinking. What if that doesn't work? What if this doesn't pan out? What if I don't make the money? What if my business fails? What if up is the opposite? What if it does work? And I like to do things like ask, what would be better? What would be bigger? What would be bolder? What would be more bodacious? All of that can move you out of limited thinking and that little box and get you to what we're calling a quantum.
I love it. I haven't heard of what if up, but yeah, I use like the what would it take? Imagine if, why not? Yeah. This open-ended, positive question. So good. Oh, okay. Such a juicy interview. Share where people, whatever you're offering, what are you super passionate about sharing right now? Besides your almost 100 books.
Well, right. Well, I guess the new book, Zero Limits Living, it's available for pre-order on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever you get books. Zero Limits Living is probably what I would mention. I'm very active on Instagram, Facebook, social media. If you just follow me as Dr. Joe Vitale, D-R Joe Vitale, V-I-T-A-L-E. I post original content virtually every day, videos and inspirational stuff to keep us all going, including me. So I'm not hiding. There's 90-some books. They're on Amazon. I have my own movie in production. I think you can go to ZeroLimitsMovie.com and learn a little bit about it. My podcast is Zero Limits Living. I think it's at ZeroLimitsLivingTV.com. Could be an entry point. That ought to keep you busy.
Amazing. Well, I'm excited for this movie, too. That will be so good. I'll share that with the world, too. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you for us today and spreading your wealth of nuggets with the world.
Thank you for the honor of being here. Enjoyed the questions, enjoyed your energy, enjoyed the time. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on today's Quantum Leap podcast episode. If you found value in what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on this platform. Your support fuels our mission to bring more enlightening conversations. Connect with me on social media at Bethany London, LONDYN, and explore BethanyLondon.com for online programs and opportunities, including our special offer of 8 free success fueled channeled healings. Feel free to share your favorite quotes from today's episode by tagging me and our guests for a reshare. I'm eagerly looking forward to our next encounter. And in the meantime, may you continue to experience all the juicy quantum leaps in your journey towards success and fulfillment. Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electricast. Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today. Electricast.